Hey, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where every week we tackle big questions from a spiritual perspective. I'm Carlos Machado. I don't know about you, but lately I find myself praying a lot about politics, but I don't always know how to pray for government effectively, how to bring out that goodness that God's government implies in human affairs. I can't think of a better person to talk about this subject with than our guest today, Tessa Frost. She's the director of U.S. Federal Government Affairs for the Christian Science Committee on Publication, and she lives in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Tessa, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Thank you, Carlos. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you. Do you find yourself praying about politics and thinking about politics like I do recently, or are you doing better than me?
Oh, I don't know better. I think politics is needing our best thought. And so the answer is yes. I pray about it all the time, just seeing and feeling God in every aspect of my life.
I'm wondering, for someone who may be new to the program, why do you turn to prayer for things like this? What's your background with it?
Because it works. Prayer has been a go-to for me now for pretty much my whole life. I was raised in a family that really wanted to know more about God in our daily actions and studied Christian Science as a way of doing that. And so that was something I had early access to. And so for me, prayer has been something that is the place where I quiet whatever is causing me concern or fear. It's like what Jesus said, to go into the closet and to really turn off all of the feedback that's coming from the world and listen for God. What does God say? What does God know? Mm-hmm. Where is God in this moment? And it's just been the place where peace is found for me, and really flowing from that peace, actionable answers.
Yeah.
And then also solutions, and usually solutions that I hadn't thought to pursue in the way that they came forward. And so it's just been so proven to me over my life that it is my best resource.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
wonderful. That's why I pray.
I want to get into some of those solutions. You and I met in Washington, D.C. many years ago, and maybe that's a good place for us to start so that you can tell what it is that you were doing and how specifically prayer helped you as a Christian Scientist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in all honesty, I kind of came kicking and screaming to Washington, D.C. I think the political polarization was never attractive to me. And I wasn't so sure that I could naturally play a role there. But I found that with the effort that the Federal Office of the Committee on Publication was working on, I had, rather than political stances to make or sort of a lobbyist role to play, I really was able to find that the work itself was actually prayerful. And it was about helping people on Capitol Hill, decision makers, lawmakers, and their staff to understand Christian Science a little bit better and more truly than they might otherwise from other sources, and to help them to address honestly if there was a misunderstanding or a misconception of it. And this particular bill was our avenue through which to have those kinds of conversations, and was certainly important in that particular context. But the focus of our work really was prayerful from the beginning through to the end, and it was based squarely in praying to see the people across from us and ourselves as God's ideas, working together in harmony to find right solutions that would bless. And then also to see, how do doors open? How do opportunities to solve problems come to you when you're thinking out from that perspective? And of course, fundamental to that is praying about government. I have to be completely honest in saying that I have gained more, not less, respect by living here and working alongside members from both sides, both parties and no affiliation, and their staff, at the earnest desire by, I mean, more than the vast majority of them, to solve the problems they see in front of them. It's been really inspiring, and to know that wisdom is a spiritual quality that God gives all of us to express has helped me be less worried about someone's opinion of how to solve a problem being different than mine.
Yeah.
I just feel like I need to make a stand in my own thought that they can hear God, not presuming that I know and I heard God better and therefore I have the better answer, but that we can each hear God and that that brings us both toward each other, but also toward a solution.
Yeah.
It ended up being that the effort itself was always considered a very uphill battle because it was a legislative effort and people thought, well, on both sides of the aisle, people had reasons to say no. Not really reasons for the policy itself. People tended to think that this made logical, fair sense. But for other political reasons, largely, they didn't agree with supporting the bill. And so what we did in advance of every meeting, just like the ones that you joined us for, was we prayed, going back to your original question about praying about government. We knew that if we were going to go into these congressional offices and explain to them what Christian Science is, why an individual would choose Christian Science, how they make their decisions independently and certainly in prayer and also in love of their neighbor and in what is right for their family and in being law-abiding always, that we really felt it was very important to have the right view of the government that we were engaging with and the individuals we were engaging with. And rather than seeing folks on different sides of a table trying to come to some point or frankly stubbornly sitting on opposite sides of the table, that this was really about that beautiful statement from Mary Baker Eddy in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, that the intercommunication is always from God to man, that this was really about God speaking to all of us.
Say a little bit more about that, because I think for the person who's sort of new to this way of thinking, you know, it may not be intuitive why having that right view of the people you're addressing is important to begin with.
The idea is you have to know who you're talking to. And if you're not talking to the real person, then you're always going to get it a little bit wrong. You're going to be speaking the wrong language. If we put it in a language analogy, someone speaks French and you're insistent that you're going to speak Spanish to them, they may catch a few bits of it.
Right. Yeah.
You may find a bit of unity, but you certainly won't be communicating the heart and soul of the message. And so seeing people as who they actually are, God's spiritual idea, then allows you to speak to them as such and allows them to receive the information as such. We found that it was vital that we were meeting with the children of God and desiring a right outcome, but not outlining it as though we knew the only right outcome. And that was actually a very important part of this, was it required a ton of patience. I was always so grateful that the Bible talks about God being the God of patience, because we've needed an infinite capacity for it. And that's only really doable as a reflection of God, as the image and likeness of God, as Genesis states that we are. That sense of trusting God's unfoldment, but working steadily and seeing God as all around us, was a really important part of that work.
That's interesting. I should mention, you quoted Mrs. Eddy there. That's Mary Baker Eddy, who's the founder and discoverer of Christian Science. And that comes from her major work, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Recently, I went to a couple of family gatherings, and I found myself almost having this political conversation with somebody that I knew that I was going to meet there, and just kind of having it ahead of time for myself. And I noticed that I had been doing the same thing with a previous gathering and, you know, talking about the same subject almost from different standpoints, because, you know, I was expecting what they would say and what they wouldn't say. And it hit me that, you know, maybe that's what polarization is, that it's just this mental atmosphere that we're just being tempted to get into, where we're seeing people as being part of these different boxes. And it keeps us from having that moment that God is creating in that situation, where we're actually meeting with them and hearing the solutions that God is providing for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said. There's another idea that I have always been fascinated by and hopeful through. It's also from Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health, and it says that man must gravitate Godward. And so when we think of polarization, it's saying that man and thought is gravitating in opposite directions to the two poles.
Sideways.
And sideways and away from each other. That repulsion you feel when you have two magnets and the wrong sides are facing each other. There's just like no way for them to come to each other. But if we take the context of our relationships and our politics and our world really out of this idea of magnetic pull and into the kingdom of heaven, God's creation, this spiritual creation that is the real, then the must word in that sentence has always really, really captivated me, that man must gravitate Godward. His affections and aims grow spiritual. What I love about that is that it is enabled in these meetings on Capitol Hill that we've gone to about that particular issue and then on successive issues, even most recently in this fall. I actually found myself heading up to some meetings and feeling all of a sudden, a very heavy sense of judgment, of fear, of concern. And I thought, well, I know that this won't work for any meeting. Again, I'm seeing the wrong individual across from me, but I can't do this. And so I turned to God and I said, why am I doing this? And what do you see going on? And it really was this beautiful sense that man must gravitate Godward. It was this sense of, there was a peace that landed on my thought that like a dove that just rested that said, you are meeting with my children. Don't be distracted by what they have said or done or appear to be. You are meeting with my children. See them as such. And you know, what did that mean to me? That I was meeting with the reflection of God, that I could look for and expect to see God's qualities expressed in these individuals, including wisdom and honesty and integrity and love and compassion. All these attributes of God have to be reflected in his image in these individuals. And I felt a willingness to put my hand in the Father's and go to meet his ideas. And then to see in those meetings, our conversations be so gentle and so appreciative across the table. And even some different solutions come forward that we weren't looking for, weren't asking. And in one case, I said, well, no, here's why we can't do that. And they said, yeah, but. I said, no, here's why we can't do that. They said, yeah, but. And then finally said, hey, send us some amendment language for the thing that you're saying can't happen, but you say you should happen, and that we're saying we'll see if we can get it done. Mm-hmm. Now, there's still some work to be done in that area, but that is a very rare occurrence that a committee staff member will beg you to send them amendment language to solve the problem that you have.
Yeah.
And I found it to be, and that was in that exact series of meetings, and I found it to be evidence of why you can confidently go to that family meeting, trusting that man must gravitate Godward. That's what we're being pulled toward, and that we will see it, even in the littlest ways, but those ways become more and more convincing to us until that's all we see and is evidenced then in our government.
Love the way you're approaching this. I want to go back to the original bill that you were working on. Speaking of evidence, what happened there?
Yeah, so over many different sessions, it made progress, adding co-sponsors until it passed under unanimous consent in the House, which everybody said that was impossible. And I remember one meeting in particular where we went into this Senate office and we really needed to meet with a high-level staffer, and they gave us their very, very, very lowest staffer. And while somewhat charming, she also seemed to a degree to be someone who was trying to act a lot bigger than her shoes were. And she asked us all kinds of questions that seemed incongruous to what we were talking about and showed she didn't really understand the issue at hand, which was fine. It was good for her to get to learn about. And we left that meeting initially pretty dejected, but then realized that love is unfolding every part of each meeting. And then we could see this individual rightly as an expression of God, of wisdom, of intelligence. And so we sort of corrected our thinking about her and said, okay, Father, what's next? Well, what's next was that in a short while, she reached back out to us and said she had gone to her high-up team, her legislative director,
And it said she thought this issue was really important and asked for it to be her issue and if the senator would please sponsor it. And in fact, he became the lead sponsor of the bill in the Senate.
Oh, wow.
It's very significant. It really proved to me how you don't want to use a human sense of judgment to make progress on anything or even to assess the progress of our country or of a bill.
Yeah.
So that was a really beautiful example. And what ended up happening was that over several sessions, the bill kept getting closer and closer to passing, that it would always come up short. There was some pretty steady and heavy opposition from a few particular offices. And we worked dedicatedly and prayerfully first, but then also to interact with them in a way that we could help address what their concerns were. It was interesting because I found my thought being so filled with this sense of divine love that I became completely convinced that it was what filled every room on Capitol Hill. It was what moved the levers of power. It was what motivated and blessed all who were working there. And then I also had this wonderful thought. There was an intern at our office when I first joined the office. And his desk, his cubby, was the last thing you would pass as you would leave the office. And I remember that he had a little sticky note there that I would see every time I went up to the Hill. And it said, "No opposition." And what that meant to me was that there is no opposition to love. There really is no opposition to God. Because God's allness includes us all. We don't oppose what we are, what we come from. And so it was more about this being Spirit's action of good. And the illusion of opposition or different groups fighting against each other or having the ability to block something that otherwise was in broad support was impossible when recognizing that it was God doing all of the acting, that it was God that is government. Love is government. And so in this case, it felt very easy to let go and trust the government of love, really. And it was beautiful to receive the call that the bill had been included and that it then passed into law and was signed by the president and ended up becoming something that was also a model when several states across the country were setting up their own insurance mandates, they were able to look at the federal model and use it as a model for their state law. So it did end up blessing more broadly as well.
Wow, that's wonderful. There are so many lessons there for me. I love the experience with that staff member and how just seeing her correctly, not that, you know, you were facing opposition, but just your dedication to seeing everyone correctly, like you said, as God's children in this situation. It seems like you found unexpected help where you wouldn't have found it otherwise. I'm thinking something that I often think in my prayers in Christian Science is that it seems like the responsibility always falls on us, which at first may seem like not what we're looking for. But what's great about that is if the responsibility is on us, then we can actually do something about it. If we can change our thinking and have the kind of transformation in our thought that changes our environment and it changes our experiences, then, you know, then it's practical. And with that in mind, you wrote an article back in 2020 that I went back to it recently and just found it so applicable to so much of what we're still dealing with in politics today. This article was published in the Christian Science Sentinel. The date is November 2nd, 2020. We'll include a link to it in the show notes, which appear on the Sentinel Watch website for each episode. Obviously, there was an election coming up, and that's part of what you were writing about, but it seems like we go through cycles of elections, and we're still just stuck in, seems like just a very toxic political environment and mental environment, really. And the article's called Pop the Bubbles of Division. And I want to quote you here, if you don't mind. There's something that you said that really impressed me here. You said, "Speaking from my own experience, I know that self-identifiers," and you had mentioned what some of these might be, but, you know, being conservative, being liberal, any kind of identifiers that we put on ourselves, that these self-identifiers can come to feel safe and comfortable. And if truly honest, we may also find ourselves feeling indignant toward people in the other bubbles. How can they think the way they do? The government, the economy, schools, healthcare, fill in the blank, would be infinitely better without them around. I certainly have had thoughts about the government, the economy, schools, even my own branch church, fill in the blank, like you said, where I thought, if this person just wasn't here, this would be so much easier. And it's something that, you know, disguises itself as being good, you know, as coming from a good place, that you're trying to accomplish something good. You want what's best for everyone. But ultimately, that ends in a justification for why it's okay for somebody else to not be around or not exist, or however you want to look at it. I'm wondering, in the time since, what has this way of thinking done for you in your life?
There's another beautiful, really powerful article by Mary Baker Eddy called Love Your Enemies that talks about, in a sense, your enemies really are your best friends, because they don't leave you where they found you. They propel you forward in really important and necessary ways to lay down false impressions, false beliefs about who you are and who they are and what government even is. Mm-hmm. To, you know, in fact, I've often thought that if everything was just like hunky-dory or even just like passably fine, people wouldn't wrestle. That sometimes it's our toughest times that calls out the very best in us. I mean, I feel like we need to have the spiritual courage to face those moments, knowing that they will bring out more good, not less, in our thinking as we are willing to, in a sense, wrestle with them and ask God, what does God know about this? And then trust what we hear. I think that's especially important when it comes to government, because it's very, very easy to think of it as different people motivated by things that may be different than what motivates you, and to have it be the kind of thing where we really do divide into different camps of, I like to say that I solve problems different than someone else does, as opposed to that they're this party or that party, because I think fundamentally that's really what government is about. It's about addressing the needs of a populace and hopefully resolving them. But what I think is quite interesting to consider is that these moments where there are great tensions call us to see them, right? Mm-hmm. To acknowledge the need and then go high to God. If you think of Moses, when he got the Ten Commandments, you know, he was walking through a wilderness with a whole bunch of people. He didn't ask for that job. He was definitely tasked with this huge job of governance over an unruly people who were hungry and tired, and where in the heck are you taking us anyway? And, you know, in order to get the Ten Commandments, which have ordered Judaic and Christian thought ever since, and really are like the footprints of peace and happiness and order, I mean, you follow those and you will find that your life opens up and just blossoms. But in order to get those, he went all the way up to the top of a mountain. And I think that of that spiritually, metaphorically, is that he left sort of earthward tendencies and beliefs down below, and he just kept going higher. And then he listened. And then he wrote it down, and he was willing to take it back to the people. And that's, I mean, to be all honest, too, I'm quite humbled by the Moses story, because he got really mad when he saw what they were doing when he got down, and he just threw down everything he'd just learned and written down.
Yeah,
you know?
It's relatable.
He kind of lost it in that moment. What I think is hopeful for me is that he got another chance. You know, he could keep going back up to that mountain, and that next time he had the fortitude to be unimpressed, frankly, with whatever the folks around him were doing, and be able to bring something to them that was to tremendously bless afterward. Yeah. But we're given another chance. We're given another opportunity to bring
what God shows us into our daily lives. And then the blessings, I think those Ten Commandments really are a promise that what we learn from God in those mountaintop places that we go in thought, where we lay down the material sense of who we are and who the opposition is. Then we go back to that one simple statement on our intern's little bulletin board. No opposition.
No opposition.
There's no opposition to love.
Tessa, I want to get your thoughts on something. I was talking to the folks at the Mary Baker Eddy Library recently, and we talked a little bit about politics, and they brought up this letter that they had posted on their website. And this is from May 1st of 1907. So Mary Baker Eddy is writing to Mrs. Stetson. Mrs. Stetson was a student of Mary Baker Eddy's in Christian Science. And Mrs. Stetson had gone to D.C. basically on a politically motivated trip. She was not happy with the administration at the time. And she comes back asking Mrs. Eddy about the church's involvement in government and her own involvement in government. And so Mrs. Eddy replies back in a letter and she says, "My darling student," and I'm going to skip down to the middle of the letter here. She says, "Avoid being identified pro or con in politics. If you do otherwise, it will hinder our cause. Remember this. Keep out of the reach of such subjects. Give all your attention to the moral and spiritual status of the race. God alone is capable of government. You are not. I am not. But God has governed through his anointed and appointed one in the way of divine science, not politics, nor the making or breaking of national laws or institutions. He, God alone, is capable of this. Lovingly ever thine, Mary Baker Eddy." That makes me think of a lot of things, but one of the things that it makes me think about is that there's such a conflation in our society today of the good that we want to do and the good that we stand for, and what we do and what we stand for politically. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how do we feel active in the world stage today and everything that we see happening out there without being political. Is that even possible?
I've noticed that prayer comes with a powerful sense of peace and doors of thought opening to be able to see that government of God already embracing whatever the problem, the people, the need is. And I have seen too many times in my own experience a solution to a problem that seemed out of control. An example is I had a rash start on my arm at one point. And this would be now 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And it started to just get out of control. And I had called a Christian Science practitioner who is someone who really is spending their thought, their time, their motives in life to understand God more, to see clearly the perfection of God's creation and of man, and then take that view to whatever problem someone calls them with and sees the solutions of God unfold in those experiences because of seeing the already existing perfection, spiritual perfection of what God makes. And I called a practitioner and said, "Could you help me with this particular situation?" And he very dedicatedly did. And I was then elected to be the first reader at our church. Our church has a one-year term. There's two readers elected from the membership, and they are the people who organize the service or who sort of host the service in a sense for the congregation that comes. And there's this beautiful companioning with the pastor of the Christian Science Church, which is ordained as the Holy Bible and Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Mm-hmm. And one of your jobs is to read the lesson sermon that comes out of those books each week during the service. And to do that understandably and understandably, I found I had the deepest yearning to to be a window where the warm light, sunlight of God poured through. You need the window because in the wall, if it was just a wall, you wouldn't be able to have that warm light pour through. But you didn't really want to notice the window, right? You wanted to enjoy the sunshine.
Right.
And so I found that the role as the window is I really, really deeply wanted to make sure that my window of thought about this job was really clean and that there was no sort of Tessa opinions in politics, frankly, to get in the way. And so as I was getting ready for this, I didn't have clothing for what I thought was a respectable showing as a reader. And so I started buying them, but I realized my arm had this rash all down it. And so all of the items that I purchased were long sleeve, and the readership was going to start in the summertime. And then I found such a sense of God's love for each of us and this wonderful sense of order that unfolds in each church service. I would spend so many hours poring over the Bible lessons and loving every minute of it, none of it feeling like a burden, feeling like something I certainly had this responsibility to do, but loved doing. I loved the idea of serving my fellow church members in this way so they could really just hear God's love for them and knowing that Christian Science Church services heal, especially when we bring that spiritual preparation to them. There's such a sense of purpose and promise to this whole thing. Well, you know, reading. And about 2 months into it, I noticed that the rash was completely gone. And I very joyfully put on one of my dresses that I already owned that was short sleeve for the next service and cherished that very complete healing. I mean, just my arm has no scar on it. And I was so deeply, deeply grateful. And I think that that healing came about in no small part because of really wanting to understand how does God see each of us? What is being brought to us in these Bible lessons each week that Christian scientists study ahead of the church service each week? And then the native blessing that flowed from that had a physical, very specific physical impact on my body because my thought had changed, had unselfed. By the way, this problem was pretty aggressive and it was just uncomfortable. It just kept getting bigger. And so when it just dried up, and it was so sudden, the healing was, that it was just a beautiful, joyful thing to celebrate.
Oh, that's wonderful. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you one more question. You and I ran into each other at the annual meeting of the Mother Church this past year, and we got into a quick chat, and the chat turned to politics and probably why we're having this conversation here today. You said that even after everything that you've experienced in your work in politics and the work that you've done as a Christian scientist, you were still struggling with some of the atmosphere in DC and just the political environment in general. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing with us what you're praying about today.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. There's been a lot of spiritual growth in my own prayer about government and politics since that time, some of which we talked about today. As I continue to pray about it, what I'm realizing is most important is to every day get a steady sense of God's allness. What does that mean? Just a sense of God's love for everyone and that nothing can keep someone from feeling that love. I think it's really interesting and beautiful, and a story I turn to as I'm praying now, looking at the needs of our government and our people now, is the story of Joseph in the Bible, because so often what looked like a tragedy for him ended up preparing him in really meaningful ways to be able to bless others and to govern in a way that was absolutely righteous and unselfish and provided, frankly, for a nation that was abundant at times and, you know, really under duress at other times. And a definition in the glossary of science and health that I constantly turn to when praying about government. It's the definition of wind. And part of it, the spiritual definition, is that which indicates the might of omnipotence and the movements of God's spiritual government encompassing all things. I like to think about the winds are blowing,
seeing God's government encompassing all things is inevitable. And the other part of that definition is the human perspective of what's going on, and that is destruction, anger, and mortal passions. Mm-hmm. I think that definition shows for me how to turn what I'm concerned about, destruction, anger. You hear about the rage economy nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mortal passions. On its head, to say that the only wind that blows is this spiritual government encompassing all things. And so what I am seeing as my day-to-day work is in my interactions with my children, with my husband, with my neighbors, with the other parents dropping their kids off at school, with the lawmakers and staff that I get to interact with the regulators, is knowing ahead of time that God's government is encompassing them. And that is a government of love. And looking at our situations with the eye of drama or of polarized politics, I think keeps us from seeing and knowing deeply that God is there, that God is everywhere, and that his government, just like the definition of wind, it is encompassing all things. And we don't always know where that comes from, just like the wind, but it touches us all and it moves things. And I think as I'm praying, the promise of Joseph and of his ability and capacity to express patience, wisdom, prayer, and fundamentally forgiveness, that I'm trying to take those qualities into my daily life to solve conflict in my family, to humble myself, to lay down a sense of I am the authority, you need to follow what I'm doing, to be willing to say, no, God is the authority and we are all his obedient ideas in harmony with each other. Even in the middle of a big fight that could be happening, and I have a six and a four-year-old, and sometimes they disagree heartily. And I'm seeing evidence of that in little and sometimes big ways that prayer is effective. It certainly is in my family's life, and I'm seeing it as effective in keeping my own sense of calm. Mm. I'm less easily magnetized, polarized away from my brother, my sister, my person on the other side of the aisle. And I'm finding that it's strengthening my sense of love for the other, so much so that there doesn't seem to be an other quite readily. And I'm kind of less impressed with the tantrums. I don't mean to make light of people's big passions and big worries, but I'm able to see the need underneath the passion, and then to see that God meets every human need, as Mary Baker Eddy so beautifully states again in Science and Health, that divine love meets every human need, and to see that then unfold in really practical ways. So that's how I'm praying about government. I think it's making our work on Capitol Hill more effective. It's certainly making it more unselfish, and so we're able to find better solutions.
Yeah, and what I love about that is that, as you've shown in your experiences, it doesn't just bring us personal peace, which it does, but it has an impact out in the world, which we all want to be a part of making the world better. And it's, I think, why we care about politics to begin with.
I think it's why we're here. I think it's why we're here. I think every thought that we have, as it is in line with what God knows, it magnifies the work of the Lord. Just like what in Job 36, verse 24, remember that thou magnify his work, which men behold. Every man may see it. Man may behold it afar off.
That's a beautiful statement to end on. Tessa Frost is a Christian Scientist in Washington, D.C., and she's the director of U.S. Federal Government Affairs for the Christian Science Committee on Publication. Tessa, thank you so much for spending this time with us and sharing your thoughts on government and Christian Science.
What a humble pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Carlos Machado. The podcast is produced by me, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. See you next week. Still looking for a summer internship that's the right fit? Or do you know someone who is? Apply to join the team for the 2026 Summer Internship Program at the Mother Church, or share about it with a university student or recent grad. Internship information can be found at christianscience.com/internships.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.